Join me in this truth. Join me in the truth of this moment. And so, a couple announcements here. So I will be offering a retreat coming up here in January. I'm going to formally invite you. The retreat is such a wonderful time to stop everything and to jump fully on the path. You know, with wintertime's a beautiful time to just to say no to the busyness of life and to contemplate, to dive inward. And there's something about winter that just draws us in. And so retreat is a perfect time to go inward and say yes to this call. So if it's in your heart, there's details on my website. It's coming up January 18th through 20th in Carbondale, Colorado. So I look to see you there. That's a personal invitation. And so what else is on my announcements? This week, I've been having busier and busier weeks, and so I wasn't able to respond to all the emails. My inbox is just full, and I am not caught up. So I apologize for that. If you had an email, feel free to just send it again. You know, don't ever think that you're bothering me. It's actually helpful if I miss it just to send it again. I want to remind everyone that this satsang is supported by generous donations. And so if you're touched by this, if you're touched by the work here and you want to share it, then support it. You know, of course you can like and subscribe and do all that kind of thing if you're listening in on YouTube, but the big thing is for you to support this work. You support it with your heart, with you joining in the Dharma. And so this truly is a movement. The Dharma is a movement. Christ consciousness is a movement. And so we need people like you and I to wake up, ordinary people, to dive fully on the path. And so the greatest way you support this work is through you jumping in. Jumping in when you're at those Christmas parties and at family dinners, or when you're sitting in traffic, or when you're, you know, changing a diaper or walking your dog. Whatever it is, you're waking up to the truth. You're waking up to your divinity and saying, yes. Yes. I'm going to live. I'm choosing to live from my highest. I'm choosing to put my mind down and to say yes. To say yes. And so for those of you who offer financial support, there's I want to offer a big thank you for that. And then, of course, there's details on my website, craigholiday.com. So I have many, many questions here, but I just want to welcome everyone in the room. Shauna and Regina and Connie and Ann and Connor and Lynn and Rayla, Jay, Jacqueline, and that might be Denny and Rhonda, Suzanne, Ivy. So welcome everyone. Welcome, Michelle. It truly is my pleasure to be here with you all. With you all. And so I'm going to just jump right into the questions. And of course, if anyone has a question here, you're welcome just to, you know, leave a little note in the chat or you know, raise your hand and we'll figure a way to get the mic to you. Okay, the first one is from Jesse. Jesse writes, Craig, how do I protect my mind from egoic thoughts? You know, there's many different ways. You know, it's so easy to get lost on this path in our mind. It's so easy to get carried away in our own arrogance, our own self-delusion or self-aggrandizement, feeling grandiose or like we know. You know, when I was young on the path, I read so many spiritual books, which is a beautiful thing because when you read these spiritual books, you feel the transmission of energy from the teacher, the guru, the master. But oftentimes we get too many ideas in our head. And so one of the greatest ways of protecting ourselves from getting lost in egoic thought is to give yourself permission to put all thought down, to give yourself permission to be completely empty. If you look at what the true mind is, true mind, it's vast, empty, spacious, awake awareness. Now that's what the true mind is. The human mind, it tends to be just full of these images and self-fabricated thoughts, and you know, we get so busy being lost in our thoughts and what we think we are, the things we think about, the commenting reality, and just none of it's the truth. None of it's the truth. So the great invitation here is, can we give ourselves permission to be childlike? What we call in Zen, to have beginner's mind. Beginner's mind and having no mind is very similar. Very similar. You know, I heard this, a Christian preacher, one of my favorite Christian preachers, speaking. And he was telling this story about Ernest Hemingway. And he said that Ernest Hemingway's father commits suicide. And when he was quite young, and then of course when at some point along Ernest's life, he commits suicide. I think he had a brother, maybe a sister who commits suicide too. And then later, so the father started it, I think it was like in 1928, don't quote me on those dates. And then Ernest Hemingway, I think he died in like 1961. And then he had a granddaughter that commits suicide in like 1992. And when we study, there's a new research field out called epigenetics. And it talks about the genes that we have. And epigenetics are, you know, beyond the gene that makes your, you know, your eye color and your height and all that stuff. But beyond that, your genes have these imprints on them, these tendencies, these egoic tendencies. And so Ernest's father, you know, he fell into despair, which is something we can fall in our mind. I mean, most of us know this experience on the path, if we're honest. At some point along the way, we've experienced despair. And when we fall into despair, it's like this whole force of mind takes over. And if we're not mindful, if we're not humble, and by humble, I mean, humble is that willingness to drop out of the mind and come into the heart, to come into this place of innocence and say, no, I'm not going to follow where my mind is taking me. If we were a good Buddhist, we'd call this mindfulness. Like a non-judgmental place. It's a place that's awake and alive and fresh. And by fresh, I mean it lives in this moment. It's not a product of the past. But poor Mr. Hemingway, he followed, you know, he followed his ancestors. He followed his father. I think his brother and his sister followed his father down that path of suicide. And then the great the great grandchild followed that path. It's a brutal thing that we do. And so in our minds, we have these forces of repetition. And if we're going to be awake, if we're going to be vigilant in this space of mindfulness, we have to say no to everything which is untrue. No which is habit, no, you know, that which comes from our ancestry. And there's all these all these commercials on TV about getting to know your ancestry. And And, you know, that's really investigating this question of who am I on a human physical level. I want to know, like, what am I on a physical level? On a physical level, I have, you know, all this Irish ancestry in me. But if we want to live in the truth, we get to know ourselves on the level of heart, on the level of emptiness, on the level of freedom, on the level of our divinity. And so, you know, boy, wouldn't life have been different for Mr. Hemingway, the first Mr. Hemingway, if he knew that he was God. When you know that you are God, you don't try to kill yourself. When you know that you're God, you do try to let go of your egoic self and let it die into your human self. And we do this with compassion. We do this with love. We do this with love. And so this willingness, Jesse, to fall into your heart and to listen to the highest aspect of yourself. When you do, you begin to discover the true mind, that there's a silent witness here, a witness that's awake, that's aware, that has a quiet intelligence, an intelligence that doesn't, you know, go off on tangents in thought, but instead an intelligence that's very simple. Because the truth is very simple. The truth is not complicated. So people oftentimes come up with these great theories about the truth, and the truth, it's not complicated. It just isn't. The truth is very simple. The truth is rooted in peace. It's rooted in love. It's rooted in spaciousness and emptiness and freedom. It has a quiet power to it. And so one of the ways we protect ourselves from being lost in our mind is noticing how are we feeling, because when we are in our clear mind, our true mind, our Buddha mind, your experience will reflect that. Your experience will be open-hearted. It'll be gentle. Excuse me. It'll be clear. It'll be free. Again, it won't be going off on tangents. The human mind goes off on these tangents and just gets lost again and again and again. It goes in every direction. Every direction. And so the greatest way to protect ourselves from being lost in our mind is through humility and vigilance. So the vigilance is saying, okay, I'm not going to get lost. I'm not going to be arrogant. I'm not going to delude myself. I'm not going to fall into those old traps. And with vigilance, you learn to study your human self. And notice, where do I get lost? So like if I was speaking about, you know, speaking to Mr. Hemingway, you know, I would encourage him to watch out for the trap. You know, the dark pit of despair. Don't fall in that. When you see yourself going down into despair, climb back out of it. Climb back out of it by following the truth and the love of your heart. Reconnect with the truth and the love of your heart. And so this is a beautiful question. So we have vigilance and we have humility. Humility means knowing your divinity. And when you know your divinity, you are connected to your experience. Too often people have this idea that humility has something to do with letting people go first, standing last in line, you know, waiting to go last to eat. Or something like that, or making yourself unworthy before God. God made you so you are worthy. God made you so you are divine. God made you so you are pure. You already are pure. You know, one of the things that my this preacher I was listening to said, when he was given this talk, was you have this choice about which genes you want to repeat in your life. And so we are all children of our parents, and we have their genes in us. But we are also children of the Most High. We're children of God. Let those be your genes. Let those be what you are. And so we can choose this. This is what spiritual awakening is about. It's choosing to know that I am God. I am this vast, spacious innocence. I am this quietness. I am this emptiness. I am this humility. I am compassion. And so we choose to jump into this actively and say, this is me. This is what I am. So yes, Jesse, it's a beautiful question. And so I'll say hi to everyone else who's stepped in the room here. Hi, Tatiana, and hi, Adrian and Mila. Thank you for joining us, sharing your hearts with us. You know, this is what satsang is. Satsang is an opportunity for us to come together and experience the good news. Christ spoke about the good news. Christ preached the good news. The Buddha said it in a little more boring way. He said, life is suffering. You know, life is dukkha. And then there is a way out of dukkha. There is a way out of suffering. That's the good news. There is a path out. There is a path that leads us out. And so when we come together in satsang, we join as a community. We open our heart and we say, okay, I've lived in the collective dream. I've been lost in it, but now is the time for me to come together with my brothers and sisters and step into the highest truth that I am. The highest truth that I am. Okay. So, the next question, Craig, I've watched your video on YouTube on healing, and they really resonated with me. Something just clicked. It was like your answer to what is enlightenment. Your response, Craig, was zero anxiety about being human. This is what I needed. Simple yet powerful. I've just started being easy on myself. I'm human and it's okay. I feel emotions and sometimes act silly. Good. And it's part of being human. Can I consider myself on the way to enlightenment? Am I catching the drift here? Alexis, yes, it's good to be relaxed about your humanity. So far too many people on the spiritual path, they see the path as a place just to beat themselves up and make it wrong that they're human. And if we make it wrong that we are human, you know, that we're in a human body, we have human thoughts, we have human emotions. If we make that a problem, we are really going to suffer. And so the old, you know, one of the old Zen definitions of enlightenment is having zero anxiety about being human. Then you ask, well, why is it that one has zero anxiety? It's because one is deeply rooted in their divinity. And so you give yourself permission to be human, and you smile at your humanity, you smile at your discursive mind, you smile at despair. You're compassionate toward your human self. You're compassionate toward your human self. And you're able to be compassionate because you're connected to the depth of your heart. So are you catching the drift here? You know, the path, when we're on the path, you want to be in the drift. You want to be in the river. You want to be flowing fast on the path. And the way to flow fast on the path, you know, to progress, to be connected with your heart, not to be lost in ego, not to be lost in mind, not to be lost in dogma, but to be connected to your heart. To your heart. So it's that willingness to feel inside, to step into that innocent purity. And from that space, you begin to see everything clearly. You see that there's this gentleness here, a spaciousness here. You may see that there's a human self here that's confused. And so we smile at that human self. We smile at the human self. And we say yes. We say yes to the human self. I see you. I love you. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm not going to, you know, attack you or make you wrong. I'm going to see that you're a gift from God, the human mind. But then I'm going to take a step deeper and say, Lord, you show me the divine mind. You show me my true mind. And when you step into the true mind, you'll notice it's absolute. It's completely quiet. It's not flooded with thought. Lord, you show me my true mind. And see, this is what Christ brought forward. This invitation to connect with something so great, so holy. Without the middleman. Without the middleman. I'm saying you are connecting directly to God in you as you. You're connecting directly to this emptiness that you are. And falling in love with that which you are. And so Alexis, a good question is, so you've let go of having anxiety about being human, good. And so have you fallen in love with yourself, your true self? Have you fallen in love with life? That's another great definition of enlightenment, is to fall in love with life. Fall in love with life. Yesterday, I caught a virus from my daughter, you know, a little cold virus. And so can you fall in love with a virus? Can you fall in love with pain, with suffering, with difficulty, with beauty, and everything that is wonderful about this world? You know, yesterday, one of my friends, he just graduated from the police academy. And so I went to see his graduation. And so I found myself in a room full of police. You know, the police force was there. And there was these young guys who just graduated from school, and then my friend, and all these career policemen and sheriffs and marshals, and of course everyone's family. And when I was a kid, you know, I was kind of a punk, and so I grew up fearing the police because me and my friends were always getting in trouble. And of course, you know, when you drive a car, you know, if you drive a little fast, you start to have this unconscious fear of the police being pulled over. And I walked into this room yesterday, and I was able to sit with all these policemen and women, and to see their divinity, see their goodness, see that they are not to be. I don't need to fear them unconsciously. I can meet with them in love. In love. You know, when I was quite young, I pulled over for driving, and I started shaking really bad in the car. And the policeman, he walked up to me and he said, "Is everything okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a little nervous because When I was really young, I saw one of my friends. He was doing something really stupid, and he got the hell beat out of him by a policeman, actually by a couple policemen. And I was projecting that onto the present moment when the police officer pulled me over, and he said, "Well, the reason I pulled you over is because you rolled through that stop sign. You didn't stop fully." The funny thing was, is I was on my way to my teacher's house. So I was really rushing, and the policeman pulled me over, and he was so kind to me. He was so gentle. He let me off with a warning, and in that moment, I began to realize that I wasn't seeing clearly. I was holding this fear in my body, and I had another experience of that yesterday when I just got to go to this this graduation of police officers. I got to see what their training was like, that the life that they go through, the difficulty they go through. It's so difficult. They have a life, with so much stress, so much amped up energy. And so, one of the experiences of enlightenment is to see people as they are in their humanity, to see their pain, their suffering, their stress, but also to see their highest divinity, to see both simultaneously. And this is one of the great paradoxes, is to see both, to see both. Okay. Here's a question. Craig, how does one know when it's time to cut your losses and walk away from a challenging relationship? Well, we must be willing, if we're in relationship and we love the individual, especially if we have children, we must be willing to do everything, to show up in every way. So often in relationship, we just simply blame the other. We don't see the other truly. It goes back to my story about the policeman. If we are hurt by someone, we let that define us. We let that define them, and we don't see them clearly. And so oftentimes in relationship, if the question is whether to stay or whether to go, that one is a question of your heart. Do you truly love this person? And are you willing to look at yourself from a place of humility and see where you have been confusing, where you have been angry or grumpy or hurtful or confused, where you have lied or cheated? And are you willing to change that? Are you willing to forgive and let go? How have you showed up in a way that has been unhelpful or unkind or unforgiving? If we're human, we see clearly that, we often do not show up in our highest sense of self in relationship. Sometimes we show up as our highest, and sometimes we show up as our lowest, and everywhere in between. And so the question is whether to stay or whether to go. This is a question of love. Do you love them? If you love them, you're willing to look and to do your work. And so I put full responsibility on you to look and to do your work. Am I being honest? Am I sharing the hugeness and the love of my heart? Or am I just sharing my ego? And have I allowed my ego to define this reality? Whether I call this reality good or bad or right or wrong, or I like it or I don't like it. Has my ego showed up and done this relationship, or has my heart? And so I put full responsibility on you. And then in regards to your partner, is your partner showing up? Do they want to show up? And are they willing to work with you? Are they willing to grow with you? Sometimes relationships, we do this thing where we fall in love and we have all this energy in the beginning of falling in love, and there's this attraction, there's this desire. And oftentimes we'll have children and that will keep us together, but that's not enough. Love isn't always enough. In a relationship, we have to be willing to continually work on ourselves. If we don't, excuse me, then the relationship will will have the experience of throwing seeds on concrete. You know, when we throw seeds on concrete, they don't grow. And eventually it fizzles out. And I see this time and time again with couples, is they're unwilling to grow. They stop showing up. They stop being dynamic, and they just see each other from ego. And so if that's the case, you know, the relationship, just like anything in life, if it's unwilling to grow, it dries up. And some people like to hold on for many years, but this tends to be a painful experience. And so go to your partner. Show them your love. If their love has dried up, show them how much you love them and how much you care. And from this place of love, see if they will join you. Now, if we play the game where we blame them for all of our problems, well, yeah, they'll probably be happy in the relationship, you know. Or it'll be two people living in a way where they're shut down, which is hell. And so we want to live in a way with two people who are radically open. I'm just going to follow up because there's another question I had. I have so many questions, and I better hurry up here. Someone wrote, Craig, my husband is angry at me because I don't go to church with him. It doesn't feel like it's my truth. I like to stay home and meditate instead. The people at church ask him where his wife is. I love the collective consciousness of the church. And don't be fooled. There's a collective consciousness in sanghas as well. You know, spiritual communities, they have these incredible bright lights, and they also have incredible shadows as well. Whether you're studying with a great master and guru, or just your, you know, the preacher down the road. You know, every church, every sangha has a shadow. And one of the shadows is that judgmentalism. Well, so-and-so didn't go to church. And so the reason we show up to church is we show up to connect in the spirit. And so, sweetie, if you're showing up in meditation and connecting with your spirit, and you feel that that is the most true, the most high, that's beautiful. That's your job. Now, if you can find it within you from a place of humility and love, to join your husband in communion, go to church with him. Enjoy yourself. It's just an hour. And also meditate. Do both. Do both. But if it's absolutely the wrong church, you know, if it's like some fundamentalist church and you're a universalist, yeah, that's not going to work. It's going to be really hard. But sometimes it's nice just to go. To join him in a place of love. But when the relationship, like when, you know, going back to that first question, when it's clear that we are on two radically different paths and we're falling out of love, there's this greater distance between us. And we're not, you know, we're not walking in the direction where we're joining back in love, and we have no interest in that. Then, yeah, sometimes the relationship will dissolve. Will dissolve. But listen. Listen in your heart to whether you should stay or go. Don't listen to your mind. Don't listen to the collective consciousness of the church or the sangha or what will the relatives think or this or that. Listen to the truth of your heart. That's the only voice you need to listen to. But make sure the truth of your heart is the truth of your heart, not the truth of your emotional heart. The emotional heart gets scared, gets angry, and normally has a fight or flight response. I have to leave now. I've had enough. That's the emotional heart. The true heart might say something like, it's time to be done. Or the true heart may say, I really love this person. Maybe we need to go to couples counseling. Maybe I need to forgive them. And so, yes, this is a good question, a good question. Okay, so the next question here is from Mila. Mila, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Hi, Craig. I had a Kundalini awakening, and I don't know how much more of this I can handle. I feel like God is testing me beyond my limits, and I don't know what to do. Mila, God is waking up in you. In you. God is not testing you. God is trying to make love to you, with you, in you, as you. So when our Kundalini wakes up, there's a tremendous amount of energy and light, prana that moves through the body. That moves through the body. This is God. This is grace. Sometimes grace is very easy. Sometimes it's very, very difficult. But your job is to surrender to the truth. Surrender to what's here. To surrender. This is your truth. Surrender. Let go into what you are. It's just energy. When Kundalini wakes up, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. When God wakes up in you, as you. I know it can be overwhelming. I know it feels like we're human and we can't take it. People online write all these blogs about Kundalini syndrome and being overwhelmed with too much energy and having too much energy in the body and how to make it stop. Well, one of the things we can do is we can get grounded. But beyond getting grounded, the invitation here is to open up to the hugeness of your heart, to reach deeper than you've ever reached before, to find something within you that's indestructible. So strong, so pure, so true. To reach within and find this strength. Find this strength. And let this strength lead you. Let this strength guide you. Let this strength show you the way. Whether we've had a Kundalini awakening or we're dealing with our husband, ex-husband, something difficult in life, the teaching is the same. The path is difficult, but the good news is when we connect with our heart, when we connect with this strength, we're walking out of darkness and into the light. This is what God wants for you. God wants you to walk into the light. So it's not about, whether you're doing something wrong or this or that or making mistakes on the path or you have a lot of symptoms of overwhelming energy. The invitation here is to step into the hugeness of what you are. This is what God is asking of you. This is what God is asking of all of us. Can you join her? Join her in having a spacious mind, a big, loving, compassionate heart. Can you join her in the truth of forgiveness, the truth of letting go? And yes, when we wake up, sometimes there's a lot of energy that moves through the body. That's good. That's a sign that you're doing good on the path. You're doing good on the path. Okay, so I have another question here, also related to Kundalini. Hi, Craig. I want to make sure if what's happening to me is related to Kundalini. I experience all kinds of bipolar issues, swings from bliss and love to deep depression and anger. When I rest in the fire, so to say, I feel pressure in my head and in my belly, my lower back. I don't experience always typical Kundalini symptoms, of rushes of energy, but there's definitely all kinds of energetic happenings within me. I'm wondering if all these dramatic swings are Kundalini. Sometimes I feel so inspired and full of life, and next day I feel drained. And so, Julian, on the path, whether this is Kundalini, whether it's bipolar issues, most of us, we know this issue, this experience. We have big swings from darkness into light and back again. The teaching's the same, whether it's Kundalini or whether it's bipolar issues. Now, of course, if you do truly have bipolar disorder, sometimes some individuals, they respond to medication with that. And so sometimes medication can be helpful. So it's important that you meet with a therapist or a counselor, psychologist to determine that. But the typical, signs of Kundalini awakening is you feel energy in your back. You feel it in your spine. You feel your chakras opening up. And so just swinging back and forth between feeling blissful and feeling depressed, well, hell, that can be anything. Good days, bad days. It could be bipolar issues. It could be Kundalini. It could be your heart chakra is opening. You're having a wonderful moment in meditation. And then the next moment, your girlfriend or wife says, I'm leaving you. So we can swing back and forth on this path. And so it's good to meet with a teacher. It's good to get some support and see what's true and to help discern what's true. What's true. And so I encourage you to reach out. To reach out and get support with your experience. We can't just listen in on YouTube. We have to be willing to, sit down with a professional, whether it's a professional teacher and guide and a professional counselor or psychiatrist or doctor, whatever it is. I always find the more help, the better. The more help, the better. Okay, so. And of course, anyone who's live, if you have a question, just let me know and, holler at me here. And I'll take live questions as well. Okay. Craig, how do you cope? I watched some of your videos regarding spiritual awakening and the physical symptoms, and I can definitely relate. Experiencing strange things such as random spontaneous laughter at inappropriate times at important meetings. Oh, how fun. As well as that, I'm extremely shaky and nervous to the point where I cannot pick up things. My memory is non-existent. I believe this is because I'm living so deeply in the moment. I was wondering how you coped with all those intense physical symptoms while living on this planet. Did you have a job or have some extra support? Yeah, did I have a job? I always had a job. So I had children and I had a teacher who needed my help all the time. So I was always busy working for him. And I had children who relied on me. And so, I had to work. How did I cope? I surrendered to God. I said, Lord, will you hold me? Will you carry me? Will you take me? Will you carry me through this day? I cannot do this. I need your strength to give birth into me, to come into me. I need your strength, Lord. And so that's how. I was once meeting with Adyashanti about this. I said, I can't do this. It's too much. My life's falling apart. I don't know how to cope or whatever it was. And he said, yeah, all these symptoms, all these experiences are inconvenient for your practical everyday life. And then he just smiled, and that's all he said. He said, it's inconvenient. But in his smile, I saw that he was just gently reminding me, Craig, go forward. It's going to be okay. We have to remember who is the boss of this world. It's God. It's not our boss, like our boss at work. The boss of this world is God. She's in charge of the universe. And so, if you're having inappropriate laughter, if you're finding yourself in fits of bliss, yeah, you might just chuckle inside. And someone asks you what you're laughing about. Oh, I was just thinking about something. I'm sorry. I'm going to stay on task. Mr. Boss Man, Mr. Boss Lady, I'm sorry. So you could smile a little bit and you know, just know it's going to be okay. Know it's going to be okay. Yeah, my memory is pretty blank, but what I found is when I let go into God, that whatever I need to know comes forward at the right time. Now, this goes back to that first question about stepping into true mind. When we step into true mind, we give ourselves permission to be completely blank and empty. And then what we find is this greater intelligence moves through us, in us, as us. In us, as us. And so God is emptying you out. And so do you want to follow the rules of this world, like of the collective consciousness? Or do you want to follow the truth of God? And if God is giving birth in you as you, I mean, come on now. Do you want to be a child of the Most High? Or do you want to be, you know, just a child in this world? You know, human ego. You must choose. But just have faith. Have faith that it will all work out. God's in charge. This is the truth. Let go into this. Let go into this. In regards to the shakiness in your nervous system, the more you relax, the more you let go, the more that will even out, my friend. Okay. So thank you for your questions. So, hello, Craig. Hello, Mr. Craig. I like that, Mr. Craig. Thank you for sharing so much of what you do. I think my third eye is opened because I'm starting to see colors and things are becoming brighter and vibrant. I am so present to what is happening in the present moment. But my brain feels like it's going crazy. I have a lot of dizziness and vertigo. I feel like I am dying. What do you make of this? Vertigo, how can I make it easier? Thank you. Yes, again, this is very similar to that last question, but I will speak about this. So when your consciousness begins to become upgraded, it's very much just like your computer being upgraded. You don't want to unplug it. You don't want to turn it off. You want to let it run its course. And so sometimes God will come into you with an intensity and you will feel, quote unquote, vertigo. I don't like, you know, that term vertigo, because it's such one of those just strange, you know, scientific kind of doctor terms. No one, the doctor doesn't really know what it is. But if you just feel into your experience, if you feel your feet on the ground and just notice, I am okay. Even if the room is spinning or things that feel disoriented, you feel like you're on a ship or whatever it is. There's been many times on the path when I literally reached down and touched the earth. Just like the Buddha, and said, this is what's real. This is what's true. Reach down and touch the earth and get grounded. And get grounded. And so the fact that you're having all these things is good. Is good. And so you can do all kinds of things to get grounded and do yoga, exercise, eat carrots and potatoes. Some people say meat, but I think that's silly. I just say, you want to get grounded, eat a root vegetable. You know, you don't have to sacrifice a cow, you know, to get grounded. You know, go walk around barefoot, get grounded, get in your body, feel the physicality of your body. This can be really helpful. But yeah, is your brain going crazy? Maybe. What is crazy? You know, your brain's being upgraded, my friend. There's a lot of energy moving through it. You know, again, what is crazy? Crazy a lot of times is just a feeling of a lot of energy moving through the body. You're not crazy. So don't go crazy. Don't believe in crazy. Stay with your experience. Your experience is showing you there's a lot of energy moving. Breathe, feel, relax, let go, trust. Trust in the Most High God. You know, this is the way forward. This is the way forward. And so, did I do a good job? Let's see here. I am going to say this. I know I say this every week. I received a lot of very confusing questions. And so I'm going to encourage you. Part of this spiritual practice is getting clear about what is it that I'm actually asking? What is it that I'm asking? And so sometimes people write me pages and pages and emails, and take the time to go inward and look, what is it that I'm actually struggling with? And then write it down. Write it down. Sit with this question in your heart. If your heart is empty, call upon God. Say, Lord, show me. Show me the way. Show me the way. Show me the truth. Show me. Show me. Okay. A couple other questions. I'll see if I can get to this. Adrian, hello, Adrian in New York City. Why are so many people having Kundalini awakenings? Because the earth is speeding up. Evolution is speeding up. You know, in the olden days, people only woke up in monasteries or convents or in the ashram. You know, we used to have this whole division between the divine life and the worldly life. God got tired of that dance. God wants the world to wake up. God is evolution. And so at this moment in history, everything is speeding up radically. And so people all over the world are waking up. And it's needed. It's absolutely needed. If this world is going to change, if we're going to survive, you know, the current, you know, crisis, environmental crisis, population crisis, global warming crisis. We need individuals who are willing to wake up and to be able to see clearly what needs to be done, what needs to come forward, what truth, what greater love needs to come forward. When you're awake, you're connected with your heart. You're able to respond with love. So yeah, God is saying now is the time. Okay, Mila is asking again, why am I going back to Kundalini each time I come out of it? It's painful and not fun. It's painful and not fun. Yes, how can you go from it fully, go out from it fully and not go into it? Is this possible? No, Mila, once you start to awaken, you know, like I was saying before, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. The way is to go through your experience. Whatever difficulty it is, we walk through it. We don't put the difficulty back in the bottle. This is an evolutionary world. In an evolutionary world, sometimes you'll ride this wave where you'll feel like you're on top. And then all of a sudden you feel like you go down, but you go down deeper. So life is like this great spiral, and so you grow greater to greater heights and lower lows and greater heights and lower lows. And so many times on the path of awakening, you know, you'll open to something like Kundalini or your heart chakra will wake up or whatever it is. And you'll feel like you're in this bliss, this light, this love, or you'll feel as if you're in this intense energetic awakening. And yeah, it can be overwhelming. It can be intense. And then it can feel as if that doorway closes. And you might be like, oh, that's great. The door closed. I made it out of it. But what God wants is for you to transform your life through waking up to the goddess that you are. The goddess that you are. God is giving you a gift and she wants you to harness it. Harness your potential. This is what spiritual awakening is about. Harnessing the hugeness of what you are. If God gives you a gift, you must master that gift. But if we have fear in relationship to that gift, like if we're feeling overwhelmed by what God has given us, you need to get grounded. You need to have a good teacher. You need to have some individualized support. So if you're asking to put that gift, that truth back in the bottle, it's not going to go back in the bottle. You may, you know, feel like Sometimes it just stops, like the energy stops. That's not necessarily a good thing, and that doesn't mean it's not going to come back. The energy of awakening is powerful. And if God is waking up in you, there's a good chance she's not going to stop until she's fully completed it. And so we have a choice to jump in with humility and say, Lord, you show me the way. I'm willing to surrender to your truth, or to resist it. If we resist, well, you know, you're going to have a hell of a time. But it's important, if it's overwhelming, if it's too much, that you ask for support, that you have a teacher, a counselor, a guide, a mentor, a sangha, a community, that you get grounded, that you learn to relax your body. So the more the body is relaxed, the more the physical body is relaxed, the more the ego is relaxed, the easier the process is. You know, the people who struggle the most with spiritual awakening or kundalini awakening or intense experiences are those who don't have a relationship with their true nature and those who don't have a relationship with God. And so they feel like they're a human being trying to wake up, or a human being who is tossed spontaneously onto a path that's very intense. And when it's like that, you feel alone. You feel isolated. It feels ridiculously difficult. And so we have to ask for help. And so you can ask for help from the Most High. You can ask for help from your heart. You can ask for help from a teacher, a guide, a counselor, a mentor, a healer. But when something wakes up in you, yeah, it may be intense. You may have all kinds of energetic symptoms which are very, very uncomfortable. But the purpose of the spiritual path is not to shut that door. The purpose of the path is to open to the Most High. And God will not let us off the hook. God doesn't let us off the hook. If she's calling upon you, you're one of the chosen ones, sweetie. See yourself as blessed. Even if it's difficult. You know, Christ, there's many times when he wanted off the path. He's like, can I get off this path? You know, take this cup from me, Lord. But then he realized that is not the truth. The truth is he had to go through his experience. This is the way forward, sweetie. And so I want to thank you all for joining me. Thank you all who supported this satsang through your generous donations. That is very, very helpful. Very, very helpful. So this year, we spent a lot on infrastructure and building here at the Sangha and technology stuff. So thank you so much. And you know, I want to say thank you for all the people that you support. So when you support the satsang, you help others. You help others to be able to tune in and listen and enjoy this truth that we all join in. So thank you all so much. Please do think about joining us this January on retreat. My absolute pleasure to be here with you all. So much love to you all. May peace be with you. A good night.